Our first class this morning will be brought to us by our brother John Colburn. The subject will be the test of practical experience. And in relation to that, we'd like to turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, and we will read through verse 26 of chapter 2. Ecclesiastes 1, verse 12. I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I gave my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. This sore travail hath God given to the Son of Man to be exercised therewith. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. That which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. I commune with mine own heart, saying, Lo, I am come to great estate, and have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I gave my heart to know wisdom, and to know madness and folly. And I perceive that this also is vexation of spirit. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. I said in my heart, Go to now, I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore enjoy pleasures, and behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, It is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting mine heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was that good for the sons of men, which they should do under heaven all the days of their life. I made me great works, I builded me houses, I planted me vineyards, I made me gardens and orchards, and I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruit. I made me pools of water to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in mine house. Also, I have great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold and the peculiar treasures of kings and of the provinces. I got me men singers and women singers, and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments, and that of all sorts. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me, and whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labors, and this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. And I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly, for what can a man do that cometh after the king, even that which hath been already done? Then I saw that wisdom excelleth folly, as far as light excelleth darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness. And I myself perceived also that one event happeneth to them all. Then said I in my heart, As it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart, This is also vanity. For there is no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever. Seeing that which is in the days of to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man? As the fool. Therefore I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Yea, I hated all my labors which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. And who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Yet shall he have rule over all my labor, wherein I have labored, and wherein I have showed myself wiser under the sun. This is also vanity. Therefore I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is in wisdom, and in knowledge, and in equity, Yet to a man that hath not labored therein shall he leave it to his portion. This also is vanity and a great evil. For what hath man of all his labor, and of the vexation of his heart, wherein he hath labored under the sun? For all his days are sorrows, and his travail grief. Yea, his heart taketh not rest in the night. This is also vanity. There is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy the good in his labor. This also I saw, that it was from the hand of God. For who can eat, or who else can hasten hereunto more than I? For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to that sinner he giveth travail, to gather and to heap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit. Let's now give our attention to our brother John.
Sisters and friends, it is indeed a pleasure to be able to come to this morning and be with you all. Last evening we had a very clear introduction given to us by Brother Dave of Ecclesiastes and what's in store for us. Just as an aside, he mentioned the third verse of Ecclesiastes, and it brought to mind something that I heard this week. Now, I was listening to the BBC. Now, that's strange for an Englishman to be listening to the BBC, I know, but they were discussed. These gentlemen were scientists and academics, and they were in one of the major universities in the UK. The main concern was that they had just broken the DNA code for the difference between an ape and a human. They were more concerned with how over thousands of years, according to them, that the ape and the human used to walk the same, and all of a sudden the human began to walk upright, could think, talk, and now they've broken this gene, and now they're going to be able to go back and tell what the difference is between man and the ape. And I'm just thinking that, you know, what profit is man? You know, what profit are they going to get from all this? And that's kissing aside, anyway. So this morning we are looking at the test of practical experience. And we see that the verses to cover this morning describe the cause and the results of an inquiry into various human activities. And the remaining verses in chapter 1 and sometimes have been referred to as the futility of human wisdom. And we see how Behelith examines the merits of purely earthly wisdom. And he is referred to in the 12th chapter verse of chapter 1 as the preacher who was king over Israel in Jerusalem. And we can see that he enjoyed great power and great wealth without limit. And he had unique opportunities for testing what life could offer. And so we see he set himself the task of seeing what life could offer. And he was going to try one experience after another without any preconceived ideas and without holding back. And we're told in the 10th verse, I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And back also in the 9th verse when he says, also my wisdom remained with me. And so we may ask what he was trying to find out. It was not simply to discover what the pleasure, what the greatest pleasure was, but what stood the test of wisdom which he brought to bear upon it. And he starts an inquiry where we read in verse 13, I give my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under the sun. Done under the heavens. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of men to be exercised therewith. Now to the Jews, the heart was considered to be the seat of all intellectual powers, as well as of their emotions. So Solomon here concentrated the full power of his immense intellect in his search for the greatest good. To seek and to search out meant that he would busy himself testing everything which was relevant to earthly wisdom. And these words show that he was determined to explore the subject from every angle and from all sides. This sore travail refers to man's inward urge to discover the answer to all human problems, but then finds his task beyond his capabilities. And he meets with frustration every way he turns. Not so with a spiritual man, who knows that wisdom is the principal thing, as it is pointed out to us in the first four chapters of Proverbs. He seeks a divine wisdom that is unto salvation, and his efforts are crowned with joy and with gladness. Now verse 14 reads, I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. In this verse, we see that Solomon was not limited in his inquiries. As we read, I have seen all the works. He was determined to test all the experience that man himself experienced. Though he did this, the results were always the same. That is, all is vanity. Man's activities are empty of any lasting worth and fail to give any lasting satisfaction. And the word vanity comes from the Hebrew hebel, meaning vapor. And this suggests that man's life is nothing and lacks any performance. It lacks any permanence, as we read in the 4th chapter of James, the 14th verse. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time, then vanisheth away. Ecclesiastes 15 reads that that which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. Man's rebellion against Yahweh has resulted in a crooked nature, which manifests itself in all acts and all kinds of perversion. In Psalm 125 we see how man is no longer upright, when the 5th verse reads, as such as turn aside into their crooked ways, the Lord shall lead them forth with workers of iniquity. Man is unable to straighten himself out with God's help, without God's help. There is a perversion in human life which is beyond man's power to rectify. Now the things that are missing in human life and which rob man the sense of completion are beyond his comprehension. His real need is a direction from God and his word. Ephesians 3:19, we are shown this with these words, and to know the love of Christ which passeth knowledge, that ye might be filled with the fullness of God. Back to Ecclesiastes in the 16th verse and 17th, we read, as I communed with mine own heart, saying, lo, I come to great estate, and have gotten more wisdom than all they that have before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of knowledge and of wisdom and knowledge. And I give my heart to know wisdom, and to know madness and folly, and perceive that this also is vexation of spirit. The first step in the inquiry was to try out wisdom itself, and in order that wisdom may be fully known by its opposites, that was also to examine madness and folly. And Coheil does not undertake without deep thought, as he says, "I communed with my own heart." He examined again his qualifications for the job, which he states in three stages. First, he was equipped with a high degree of wisdom, even compared to those in Jerusalem. Secondly, by experience, he had gained much understanding. And finally, he applied all his resources of mind to the investigation. Yet not only did the pursuit of knowledge become burdensome, but the effect was to add to the anxiety of life, which can be summed up in the final verse of the chapter, which says, "For in much wisdom is grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow." Now, looking at the second chapter of Ecclesiastes, we see him describing the extent of his search for the meaning of life. For in the first 10 verses, we see how he explored mirth and pleasure, finding them to be vanity. And he even experimented with wine while guiding himself with his wisdom. In other words, he did not withhold anything his eyes desired, and he used his great wealth to build and accumulate everything his heart wanted. Yet, in verses 11 to 23, when he looked back on all he had done, he found it to be vanity and grasping for the wind. And reflecting upon the comparative value of wisdom and folly, he did find wisdom to excel folly. But he did find and observe that death came to both the wise and the fool, and both were soon forgotten. And this prompted him to have life. Even all his worth did not provide any respite, as he must leave it to someone who indeed may prove to be a fool. And therefore, he found such efforts to be grievous, leading to sorrowful days and to restless nights. And finally, he concludes, "It is best to eat and drink and enjoy what good there is in one's own labor." However, he realizes that the ability to truly enjoy life is indeed a gift of God. And he saw that God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who is good in his sight. To the sinner, God might give the ability to gather and collect great wealth, but eventually it winds up in the hands of him who is good before God. Therefore, much labor without God's blessing is truly vanity and grasping for the wind. And so in the first two verses of this second chapter, we read, "I said in my heart, go to now. I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also is vanity. And I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it?" The word mirth in the first is simcha in Hebrew, and signifies gladness and rejoicing, indicating harmless amusement. And he will test to see if it can yield the lasting joy he seeks. For it does not include the senses that are necessarily sinful. We, however, live today in a very permissive age, in a permissive society, where experiments constantly are going on with drugs, drunkenness, and all manner of evil. But not so Koheleth, whose experiments were all conducted within the bounds of divine law. If you read in the third verse, "I sought in my heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting my heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly, till I might see what that was good for the sons of men, which they should do unto the heaven all the days of their life. His next thought is to indulge in physical enjoyment and the pleasures of the table, which is represented by the wine. And above all, it was necessary to retain a measure of detachment, as the Revised Version says, "My heart yet guiding me with wisdom." Solomon's intellect is directing his experiment, and his judgment will not be corrupted, neither will he stray from any purpose. His wisdom will be in command, guiding and directing each test, and his judgment and conclusion on moral activity is therefore utterly reliable and trustworthy. Reading and starting in verse 4, we read, "I made me great works, I builded me houses, I planted me vineyards, I made me gardens and orchards, and I planted trees in them of all kinds. I made me pools of water, to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in my house. Also I had great possessions of great and small cattle, and above all, that were in Jerusalem before me." He refers to, in the fourth verse, to great works. The works included, as we see, building, planting vineyards, planting trees and parks, such as Solomon had created for himself and for Pharaoh's daughter. We know that he was a landlord or landowner on a large scale, and he also exercised great gifts in administration for maintaining his palaces and estates and looking after his flocks and his herds. And we also told that he acquired great amount of slaves in vast numbers. He also got great wealth, both in personal possessions, referred to as peculiar treasure, in that which came by way of tribute from the provinces and client states, as referred to in verse 8, when it says, "I gathered me also silver and gold, and the peculiar treasure of kings and provinces. I got me men and singers, men singers and women singers, and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments, and that of all sorts." We see that his kingdom was indeed very opulent and glorious, and it is a fitting type of the kingdom of God, over which Christ, as a future builder of the future age, will reign. And we can get a description of the glories of this particular kingdom of Solomon if we turn to 1 Kings, 10th chapter, commencing at the 14th verse, where it says, "Now the weight of gold that came to Solomon in 1 year was 603 talents of gold. And beside that, he had the merchantmen, and of the traffic of the spice merchants, and of all the kings of Arabia, and of all the governors of the country. And King Solomon made 200 targets of beaten gold. 600 shekels of gold went into one target. And he made 300 shields of beaten gold. 3 pounds of gold went into one shield. And the king put them in the house of the forest of Lebanon. Moreover, the king made a great throne of ivory and overlaid it with the best of gold. And the throne had 6 steps, and the top of the throne was round behind, and there were stairs on either side of the place of the seat, and 2 lions stood beside the trays." So we see that the king exceeded all the kings of the earth for riches and for wisdom. And all the earth sought to Solomon to hear his wisdom, which God had put in his heart. And they brought every man his present, vessels of silver, vessels of gold, and garments, and armors, and spices, and horses, and mules, year by year. And we see Solomon also gathered chariots and horsemen and had 1,400 chariots and 12,000 horsemen whom he bestowed in the cities for chariots with the king of Jerusalem. He also, we see, indulged his taste for music by instituting choirs of male and female singers, both for his joinmen, but also for his guests. And we also note in this particular verse that he did not exclude the more sensual pleasures, as the words, the delights of the sons of man. And as it is rendered in the Revised Version, I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, man's delight. The enjoyment of a harem would scarcely be left out of the record of the many luxuries of an Oriental monarch. And as we read in 1 Kings 11:3, and he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines. Indeed, his immense resources were used to gratify every whim. Because in verse 9 we read, so I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem, and also my wisdom remained with me. No one could compare to the splendor and magnificence Solomon, because the longer he reigned, the greater, in fact, he became, because he increased in stature and splendor, and his greatness and his glory, prosperity and peace and wisdom established him as a fitting type of Christ and his kingdom in the millennium. Verse 10:11 read, and whatsoever my eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, I was always vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. In the enjoyment of work which occupied his mental powers, we are told he found his portion. But then he stood and surveyed all he had done, and in the light of his wisdom he found it still a striving after wind. Whatever pleasure he got at the time did not last for long, and as we are told, no profit under the sun. In verses 12 and 13, read, and I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that cometh after the king, even that which hath already done? Then I saw that wisdom excelleth folly, as far as light excelleth darkness. He therefore turns to verse 12 to a further investigation of wisdom and folly, still more equipped by the experience he has gained. If he, as king, had used all his resources in gaining this experience, what indeed can other men hope to do after him? And with all this experience and taking nothing for granted, he can speak with certainty and with a personal knowledge when he declares in the 13th verse, then I saw wisdom excelleth folly, as far as light excelleth darkness. The 14th verse reads, the wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness. And I myself perceived also that one event happeneth to them all. And therefore we see that the wise man has the power of direction, whereas the fool is like a man stumbling in the dark. And yet, for all that, they both come to the same darkness in the end. One event happeneth to all. Then said I in my heart, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart that this is also its vanity. For there is no remembrance of the wise, no more remembrance of the wise, more than of the fool forever. Seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man? As a fool. So here he takes up again his inward musings. Why do I toil to be wise if I come to the same end as the fool? Not only do both die, but both are forgotten, so that it cannot be said that there is a gain for anyone. As the psalmist says in Psalm 112, verse 6, that the righteous shall be had in everlasting remembrance. Samuel is speaking in terms of human experience. But Proverbs 10 is more to the point here when it says, the memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot. Verse 17 then reads, therefore I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. The effect, and Solomon is to bring disgust with life and a sense of irritation in its labors, since all seems to be subject to futility. And yet the hatred of life is by no means absolute, and must be qualified by saying such things as we read in the ninth chapter of Ecclesiastes, the fourth verse, for him that is joined to all the living, there is hope. For a living dog is better than a dead lion. Verse 18 saith, yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. And verse 9, who knoweth, he shall be a wise man or a fool, yet shall he have rule over all my labor where I have labored, and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. This is all vanity. And with this conclusion of disgust, his thoughts return to works in which he has found some satisfaction. Now, even these thoughts are soured by the thought that all must be given to or left to a successor who may waste it. All he has created and achieved may be left to a fool, and who may waste everything. Whoever follows him will have absolute power over the products of the kingdom's wisdom. And indeed we see how Solomon spent 40 years in building up his wealth in Israel into a great nation. And yet it took his son Rehoboam only a few months to tear it all down. Continue on now to verse 20, we read, therefore I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in equity. Yet to a man that hath both labored therein shall he leave it for his portion. This also is vanity and a great evil. For what hath man of all his labor and of the vexation of his heart wherein he had labored under the sun? For all his days are sorrow, and his travail grief. Yea, his heart taketh not the rest in the night, and this is also vanity. I went about, or literally I turned about, as a traveler turning to look at the way he had just come. Now turning and looking for answers to the perplexing problems of this life. And we see that whenever he turns, he meets only frustration, and which causes him to give up in despair. He finds it a great evil and must leave all the products of his intelligence and skill as a heritage to one who has done nothing to earn it. Or what use is it for a man to toil, strive even, if robbed of sleep by his preoccupation? As we read in the 23rd verse, all the days are sorrow, The word here signifies pains. The man who seeks to gain lasting satisfaction from his toil will indeed receive only pain and suffering as he tosses and turns in bed, trying to find finding no rest to his soul. And this is clearly summed up for us if we turn to Job chapter 7, when it says in verse 1, "Is there an appointed time to man upon earth? Are not his days also like the days of a hireling? As a servant earnestly desireth the shadow, as a hireling looketh for the reward of his work. So I am made to possess months of vanity, and wearisome nights are appointed to me. When I lie down, I say, when shall I rise? And the night be gone. And I am full of tossing to and fro unto the dawning of the day. My flesh is clothed with worms and clods of dust. My skin is broken and become loathsome. My days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle, and are spent without hope. Oh, remember that my life is wind. My eyes shall see no more. See good. The eye of him that hath seen me no more. Thine eyes are upon me, and I am not. As the cloud is consumed and vanisheth away, so he that goeth down to the grave shall come up no more. He shall return no more to his house, neither shall his place know him any more. Therefore I will refrain my mouth, I will speak in the anguish of my spirit, and I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. I am at sea, or a whale that now settest a watch over me. When I say, my bed shall comfort me, my couch shall ease my complaint. Thou scarest me with dreams and terrifies me with visions, so that my soul chooses strangling and death rather than my life. I loathe it. I would not live always. Let me alone, for my days are vanity. What is man that thou shouldest magnify him, and that thou shouldest set thine heart upon him, and that thou shouldest visit him every morning and try him every moment? How long wilt thou not depart from me, nor let me alone till I swallow down my spittle? I have sinned. What shall I do unto thee, O thou preserver of men? Why hast thou set me as a mark against thee, so that I am a burden to myself? And why doest thou not pardon my transgression, and take away my iniquity? For now shall I sleep in the dust, and thou shalt seek me in the morning, but I shall not be there." In the 24th verse of Ecclesiastes, we read, "There is nothing better for a man, that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw, that it was from the hand of God." We read in this verse how Cornelius has decided, in the face of all life's inconsistencies and all its frustrations, that the wisest thing he can do under the circumstances is to exact what enjoyment he can from the simple pleasures of man, of simple pleasures of life. That is daily work, companionship of homes and of friends. And this indeed is Yahweh's gift to man, as we see again by turning to the third chapter in verses 12 to 22, when it says, "I know that nothing is better than to rejoice and do good in their lives." So I perceive that nothing is better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his heritage. For who can bring him to see what will happen after him? And as we come to the end of the second chapter of Ecclesiastes, with verses 25 and 26, we read, "Who can eat, or who else can hasten hereto more than I? For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight, and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner he giveth travail together and to heap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit." The word hasten in the 25th verse is rendered enjoyment in the Revised Version. And it's from a root word used to indicate feeling, which includes suffering, fear, and pain. All power to experience these particular sensations comes from Yahweh. He healeth therefore us, who can prove this experience better than I? The words in the 26th verse, God giveth to a man that is good, does not imply that Yahweh is continually judging the good and the wicked, and bestowing wisdom and knowledge on the good, and while giving pain and suffering to the wicked. The reading of both Psalm 73 and Isaiah 53 would show differently. They indeed reveal that the sinner can receive much good in a long and a healthy life, while the righteous may indeed be in trouble every day. The type of good man referred to in this verse is shown in the people of Nineveh, which we read in Jonah chapter 3, the 5th verse. So the people of Nineveh believed God, proclaimed a fast, and put on sackcloth, from the greatest to the last of them. Then word came to the king of Nineveh, and he arose from his throne, and laid aside his robe, and covered himself with sackcloth and sat in ashes. And he caused it to be proclaimed and published throughout Nineveh by the decree of the king of his nobles, saying, let neither man, nor beast, nor herd, or flock taste anything. Do not let them eat or drink water. But let a man and beast be covered with sackcloth and cry mightily to God. Yes, everyone turn from his evil way and from the violence that is in his hands. Who can tell if God will turn and relent and turn away from his fierce anger so that we may not perish? Then God saw their works, that they turned their evil way, and God relented from the disaster that he had said he would bring upon them, and he did not do it. And so Solomon's conclusion here is indeed a gloomy one for those who find significance in this current life under the sun. He is indeed concluding that there is nothing better, as read, not good for a man except to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. We know and see man has a limited enjoyment from the things he does, both at work and at play. And that also has been the conclusion of every of Solomon's experiences. The things of this life do give pleasure, but only for a while. So if a man that has everything the world has to offer investigated everything that was to be investigated, and still came back empty and wanting, then indeed fulfillment must lie in a higher plane. Many people have their focus and efforts set on the things of the world and completely ignore the scriptural message. And we have seen how this leads to eventual frustration. Indeed, satisfaction is a gift of God, and it is only through Him that we are able to find true and lasting satisfaction. We see that whereas labor in Ecclesiastes is ultimately of no profit and is to be rewarded only with death and temporary satisfaction, work in the Lord is entirely different. Our labor for Him is not in vain in any sense of the word, because it will lead to our redemption from the bondage of sin and death, to the reversal of the pessimistic worldview which the preacher was forced to portray when he considered life under the sun. There are two types of work, two types or levels of living, with two very different rewards. Work for this world, or work for the Lord.
we think about all the things that Solomon experienced, volumes, in comparison to the things that we experience, and he found no satisfaction in any of those worldly things that he had had. I think there's some really good admonition for all of us here in the words that Brother John has brought to us this morning from Solomon. We'll get back together here around 10:20. We'll have a break now. Thank you.